Hello and welcome to Diane's Kamikaze Fun Machine, the podcast. I am Diane, sometimes known as Diane Kamikaze. The first 138 episodes were tied in with Diane's Kamikaze Fun Machine as they were all guests who appeared on the program. I am currently on the air on WFMU's Rock and Soul radio stream, Wednesdays from 9 to 10 a.m., and I don't include interviews in that program. So these are special pieces that I'm bringing to you because they're fun, funny, weird, or important. I love having fun and having people share their experiences. I'm a rocker for life and I'm a retired tattoo artist. This series, you may hear more art personalities in addition to chats about music and who knows what else. All right, check it out. And thanks for listening. Chapters in tattoo history. I started tattooing split between Manhattan and Connecticut in the 1980s. And I opened my own shop in New Jersey in 1991. I find the heritage, creativity, and rebelliousness of this ever-changing business very captivating. It's a lifelong passion for me, almost as much as music. During this series, I'll be presenting one-on-one interviews with tattoo figures, and we'll see how it goes. Vivien Lazanga from Seattle is my first guest in the series Chapters in Tattoo History. Tattooing since the 1970s, she paved the way for women in this industry. And she's also an expert and pioneer in the art of camouflaging and transforming mastectomy scars. Her Instagram handle and her .com are the same, Madame Lazanga's Tattoo. Lazanga is spelled L-A-Z-O-N-G-A and with an S.
I don't go using needle bars and needles and tubes and all that stuff. I don't do that anymore. I did that for decades.
Did you choose to go to rotary because you had to or because you really saw that it was going to be easier?
I went to it because it was new technology and it was lighter and my hands, I had to have the carpal tunnel surgery done on both hands, so I just shifted over to the rotaries.
And how many years had you been tattooing before you had to get the carpal tunnel surgery?
Oh my God, let me think. It was about, I think I'd been already tattooing for 48 years or 47 years. I don't know, something like that.
Still, I'm just astounded. The longevity. Yeah. So my guest is Vivien Lazanga, and you're known as being the queen of color.
Okay.
What was it that actually had you get into tattooing to begin with?
The fear of starvation. I don't know. I'm just kidding. No, it's like when I left home at the age of 18, I was on my own. I didn't really have a family or support or anything, so I drifted around, did a whole bunch of different things. I managed to put myself through beauty school. I worked at the phone company for 6 months. I hated that. And then I was a hippie and I hitchhiked around when you could back in the day. Then I worked at this factory, a sleeping bag factory in Seattle for a while. I worked there and then I would take the summers off and then I'd go back to work there. But through all the people that my ex-husband and I knew at the time, I found out there was this little old man opening a tattoo shop in Seattle. And by that time I had already received my first tattoo at another tattoo shop in Tacoma. There were no tattoo shops around. And I wanted to get a tattoo, but I didn't want to sit in the front window. I mean, you know, you had to pick something off the wall and you had to sit in the chair in the front window and get it. So I figured, okay, I don't want a traditional rose because it's so overdone. They didn't have anything for females back then. So I got a skull with bat wings. I thought, yeah, that's really esoteric. I'll get that. So I got that on my arm. And then shortly after that, I found out that through a friend that this little old man had opened a tattoo shop in Seattle. And I thought, yeah, I need to go down there and talk to him. So I did. I went and I met him, and I asked him if he needed help, if I could be his helper. And of course, he was really pleased. It's like, yes. And so he was the only tattoo shop in town back then. I think he got that shop from Zeke Owen, because Zeke had it before until he had to leave town. But that's a whole other story.
Totally another story.
So that's how I got my start. I was his helper outer. And the first thing I did was I told him about getting an autoclave. He didn't know anything about all that stuff.
So you did from the beauty business?
No, I just found out. I don't know how I found out, but I knew that we had to have autoclave. And so the first autoclave that we got was a castle. They looked like very space agey. They're real tiny. And you could actually carry one with you if you traveled. I used to. I had another castle autoclave that I used to take with me.
Wow.
Places. Oh, I loved them. And of course, like everything good, they stopped making them. And then you couldn't repair them. So it's like, yeah, another era gone by. Anyway, that was my start. I was the only female tattooer around. And a few years after that, when we did the first tattoo expo, I don't even know if it was an expo. I can't remember. It was in 1976 in Houston. Nakano, he was there. A different Horiyoshi than the ones that we are familiar with. Remember the name. So everybody showed up, and there were no other female tattooers there. I was it. So was I didn't think anything of it. It's like, okay, this is cool. You know, it was everything always centered around my work and a whole new world. Yeah.
So what year was it that you actually did your first tattoo?
It was 1972. I did my first tattoo on my thigh. On me.
What was it?
A crescent moon and a star.
How does it look now?
Yeah, it looks okay. It's a little bit faded, but it looks okay.
When you see your old, like when somebody walks in and they go, oh, you tattooed me 30 years ago, what's your initial reaction?
I cringe.
And then you see it.
Let me see that tattoo.
And then you see it, and it's...
A lot of times they look good, sometimes they don't, too faded out and whatnot, yeah.
How long did it take you to really develop your own style? Because you were known for this really rich color, just beautiful tones and beautiful transitions. When did you really start to focus on something that looked like it was yours?
Probably pretty close to the beginning. I did a lot of experimenting and a lot of large work at home. During the day, I would go to the shop and tattoo the walk-ins and do all that. And then I would do other special pieces, larger pieces at home. And yeah, so I did a lot of experimental stuff that wasn't being done before. How would I describe it? I did like shapes and things blended with sort of like black line work. You could call it tribal or Art Nouveau, flowing lines and stuff.
How long did you work at that one tattoo shop? And then where was your next step?
I worked at the Seattle Tattoo Emporium. That was Danny Danzel's shop. So I worked underneath him for about 7 or 8 years. Little by little, you know, when I was there with him, I would discover other artists, like some of the guys from Long Beach, that they were out kind of roaming around looking for work because it was right after the Vietnam War. And so I kind of looked at it as the lost samurais looking for work out there. But I discovered Tom Yeomans, which was Don Nolan's half-brother. I didn't know it at the time, but Tom and I became friends, and I invited him up to Seattle to work. So he was working at the shop with me. I learned a lot from him, and he was great. He was a really, really good tattoo artist. because everything he did was really clean and sharp, and he knew a lot, and he taught me a lot. He was on the run, I guess. He had skipped a bail. Anyway, the FBI came in one day and took him away. I was devastated. I know.
It's totally not funny. And those are things that happened back in the tattoo industry. That was a large part of the tattoo business was criminal, well, and...
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky because I never got to see a lot of what really went on in the tattoo world. But I always heard stories like people ink bombing other shops and stuff, or putting glue in their locks or whatever, you know. Aside from that, you know, bad-mouthing them behind their backs and spreading malicious stuff that wasn't true. I had a lot of that done to me, but so what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a rebellious industry, a rebellious society within itself.
Right, it was.
And it takes a certain personality to be able to hang.
I don't know, but I've been hanging for 51 years, so I must be doing something. I don't know. I don't pay attention to all this other stuff out there. I think I just have a narrow vision. Maybe that's what keeps me going. I just do my work, and as you get older, things change. Your body begins to deteriorate, so that's what I'm dealing with now. I can't go like I used to, and I don't like that, but that's the reality of it.
So do you find you have to pick and choose your work, or is it more about how do you manage working with a slower schedule?
I just juggle what I want to do and when I want to do it, and I still have to hustle to a certain degree. And now I have to market because everything has changed so drastically. I have to deal with the internet, and I don't like it, but I know I have to do it.
Well, I'm going to guess that there's not just one shop in Seattle anymore.
150 shops, yeah.
That's insane.
Well, there's so many newbies. I don't know them. All the young people know them. I don't know any of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes I'll hear their names and stuff, and especially the good artists in town. It's like, oh, yeah, I've heard he's really good, but I have yet to drag my ass over there to meet them. So what is the proper way to do this? I don't know.
What I find in the tattoo business is that it's really a combination of art, drafting, medical, customer service, obviously, connecting with people, the technical stuff, the mechanical stuff is a little bit maybe the older machines and that kind of thing, but mm-hmm. What aspect of tattooing do you like most? What aspect do you sort of dive into more than other aspects of it?
I like designing a lot. I love it. And working with people, sometimes, you know, it's interesting. I love it. Sometimes it's a challenge, but I think it's really good. I love all my clientele base. I love the people. And designing, it's fun.
So for the most part, do you draw things on people, or do they just tell you where they want it? Because if I'm not mistaken, a lot of your work is designed for the body shape.
It is. We do a consultation first, and then we talk about that, how they see it on their body, and then I'll design the piece to fit the area where it's going on the body. Mm-hmm. And I've always done that. That was like part of my vision before I even started tattooing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I always wanted to do. And I never liked the pitchy-patchy look. That's what I call it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, teach their own. I never really liked that look on the human body because humans are beautiful. I don't care what they look like. I think the human body is beautiful. And I just want to do what I can do to enhance it. Mm.
So you actually saw that, this kind of work, before you even started tattooing?
Yes. Yes, I did.
That's really neat. It was always what you wanted to do.
Yes. I had no background in tattooing, didn't know a thing about it, and just dive right into it, the culture, everything.
Well, and in a lot of ways, you're responsible for a lot of the culture. People got to see a lot of feminine work coming out of Seattle, seeing work that was designed for a woman's body, which is a big, big break in what we're used to seeing or what people see in their minds to begin with when they think of a tattoo. They think of a sticker.
Yeah, a sticker.
The pitchy, patchy thing. Yeah, really. So I do want to acknowledge that that's an amazing vision. And I really, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do. I still want to do it. I guess the hardest part that I deal with is talking to people about my vision, about how it would look best when they already have it in their mind, what they want. And so I have to really negotiate with that sometimes.
What percentage of people will let you do completely 100% of what you see for them?
Maybe 50%.
Could you talk about the mastectomy scar work that you do?
Well, I started doing that, and then I didn't think anything of it. Marissa from New York, she wrote that book on tattooing. She put me in her book, and everybody was like, wow, like amazed that I was doing mastectomy scar cover-ups. And I had no idea the impact that that would have on everybody.
That's a huge gift to women in general, because losing a part of your body has got to be devastating.
Yeah.
And to be able to regain some confidence and some beauty is really a beautiful thing.
It is. That's why I love it so much. And I love these women so much. So I'm very grateful that I can do this kind of work.
I'm really still struck by the fact that this is your vision before you even were tattooing.
Yeah, it never entered my mind. It's like, this is the way that I see it. This is what I want to do. And I don't care what everyone else thinks. This is me being true to my vision. And what everyone else wants to do, that's fine.
Thank you for being true to your vision. Because it's well, what we get to see is absolute beauty.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what's your most fun tattoo experience, whether it's getting a tattoo, where do you bring, I know there's satisfaction, I'm hearing satisfaction from you, but what's the joy? What's the really like, oh, and where can you get like wiggly and like, oh, that was fun? Like, what does that for you?
Well, I mean, when I create something that I love, and then I get to tattoo it, I mean, it's a process, so by the time I get done, I'm probably looking like a zombie. But, I think it's fun. My life is fun. I may not look like it, but it's fun.
If you've been working on something big that drains you, that takes a lot out of the client, and then you see it like you see them a few weeks later, a month later, and it's healed. Is there like a renewal, kind of like, oh, wow? When does the payoff, when does it actually work for you?
Well, I don't always get to see when they don't always come back. So I don't get to see them after I've done the tattoo. Sometimes I do, but not always. The payoff is just me being able to do what I do. I don't have any expectations out of anything.
Did you feel that you had to really sacrifice in your life to stay in tattooing or get in tattooing?
Well, when I was married, it was different. And he became jealous of me early on in my career, and that was hard to deal with. So, of course, we got divorced. Other things, experiences when I dated, it was guys always wanting either free tattoos or wanting me to teach them to tattoo. So I've been real guarded about that ever since. And to date someone outside of the tattoo industry is very different. And I don't know if I know how to do it, but I'm not dead yet, so I'm practicing how to do that.
So we're here, actually completed the International Puerto Rico Tattoo Convention, where they honored women who have been in the tattoo business for a long time, and you obviously are one of the honorees. How was the weekend?
It was fabulous, of course. I'm not used to it, but to be so honored by so many people. Yeah, I know it's a whole different thing for me in my life. Yeah, it's nice. It's nice that all the other women got to be honored as well. So the older generation of women tattooers being honored, which is long overdue. So maybe this is the beginning of it, and I hope we can do something meaningful for not only ourselves, but future women tattooers that grow into old age, to have it recorded in history so we're not just forgotten about like so many tattoo women in the past.
Yeah, very true.
I want to keep that history alive.
What are you proudest of?
I think just me not getting involved in people's high drama, although I've had it, but I've escaped out of it pretty good, I would say. I'm proud of just my tenacity and longevity. And I swear to God, I have like some angels watching after me. And I trust in that. I trust in myself.
We do too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to Vivine Lazanga. Give her a follow on her Instagram, which is Madame Lazanga's Tattoo, and check out her website of the same name, MadameLazangasTattoo.com. She is in Seattle and immensely talented.
Thank you for tuning in. More on the way. My Instagram handle is one word, Diane Kamikaze. Kamikaze ends with an E. Follow me there. The full link to my index of shows can be found on wfmu.org/playlists/DK. So that's playlists, plural, and then the DK is both uppercase, capital letters. I am working on encore presentations. I've got years of interviews and podcasts. If there's something you'd like to see reposted, please get in touch. Send me email, diane@wfmu.org, and be sure to subscribe to the show. Diane's Kamikaze Fun Machine radio show can be heard on the WFMU Rock and Soul radio stream. That is New York time, 9 a.m. on Wednesdays. Thank you, thank you. See you next time. Always have fun. Do it.